Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Texas is still a conservative state in the fall in the general election, but in the Democratic primary, Texas is a very liberal state.
Former Texas Congressman Martin Frost on All Things Considered yesterday about the new world of Texas politics that the Democratic presidential hopefuls are finding compared to the 1990s. Here's more.
What's happened in Texas is that in the last 20 or 25 years, the whites who vote in the Democratic primary have gotten progressively more liberal, because conservatives don't vote in the Texas Democratic primary anymore. So this will come down to a battle in May, come down to a battle of who wins the liberal white vote. The state is changing so much. You have an awful lot of new people in Texas, people who've moved in from the Midwest and from the Northeast looking for work. I suspect that the Clintons, Bill and Hillary, are in somewhat of a time warp in how they view Texas. They were active in Texas politics in 1972 for the McGovern campaign. I'm not sure they fully understand the Texas of 2008. And if they lose the primary there, it will be because they were thinking of Texas 20 and 30 years ago rather than the way Texas is today.
And how wacky is the Texas voting system? Well, as I understand it, it has a primary all day to select about two-thirds of the delegates and caucuses at night to select most of the rest. In addition, districts that voted more heavily for Democrats in the last two elections actually get more delegates per precinct to allocate. Your vote is literally worth more or less depending on where you live. Now, these oddities apparently tend to favor Obama. Caucuses favor him because the most enthusiastic voters tend to show up, as has happened around the country, and the areas most likely to go for Obama are the ones with those extra delegates, simply because the largely black areas voted much more Democratic in 04 and 06 than the mostly white or Latino areas. And here's one final twist. A whole bunch of districts have exactly four delegates to select, and the rules are that unless a candidate wins more than 62% of the vote, those four delegates are split two and two. So there's a greater likelihood than in most states that one candidate could win the popular vote and the other win in delegates. Wow. Joining us for more now on the way Texas votes and the last-ditch campaigning are WNYC's Bob Henley in Austin today and Paul Burka, executive editor of Texas Monthly. Hey there. Welcome to WNYC, Paul. And Bob, how you doing down there?
Good morning. Well, it's just here. Great.
Paul Burka, that voting system, did I get it about right?
You did pretty well. There are 228 delegates at stake, and 126 are chosen by election, and 102 by caucuses and by position. And it's when you stop and think about it, that's a pretty anti-democratic small D mix, not to give the people a say over 102 delegates. So the caucuses are really for party insiders. They lead to conventions, which the insiders control. So I think it's a horrible system. But
and people can actually vote twice. You can vote in the primary during the day and then go back and caucus at night?
That's correct. Yes. And then, though, you have to go to a precinct conventions lead to county conventions, which lead to state conventions. So we won't know for sure, although we'll have a pretty good idea, how the caucuses worked out until the county the state convention in June.
Because they're not actually allocating delegates at these caucuses to the Democratic National Convention. They're allocating them to these local conventions, which then go up the chain, the way you just said?
Right. You know, people get bored, don't show up, lose interest, go on vacation.
Where'd this system come from?
Well, it came from the days before Texas had a primary. Texas didn't have a primary until 1976. And before that, because of this peculiar system that we had, Martin Frost talked about in the clip that you played, we had a dominant Democratic Party that had a conservative wing and a liberal wing. And the only way the conservatives could be sure of controlling it was through this caucus system, that they could get their votes out. And the liberals tended not to come back at night, so the conservatives controlled everything. And, you know, that we've been doing that way for 50 years. Why change?
Any Texans listening? Former Texans, we can take your calls on the Texas primary tomorrow, either the system or the particular politics of this race. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692 for Paul Burka, executive editor of Texas Monthly, and WNYC's Bob Henley in Austin today, a Jersey guy with a Texas size assignment. What you been doing, Bob?
Well, I guess I landed in Houston, drove from Houston to Austin, pulled off the road, talked to voters. I did find people lining up to share their opinions about this this national moment, if you will, this historic moment. Everyone does have an opinion. They're calling it the Texas two-step. That's what the Obama folks have called. And they someone likened it to like being a Baptist in terms of going to church all day and all evening on a Sunday. And
that's the nickname for this voting system, the Texas two-step.
Right.
Go ahead, Bob.
No, I was just saying I did have an opportunity to stop in at both headquarters here in Austin. And the Obama organization is really to the point that Paul was making about the difference between the two Texas and the clip you played from Congressman Frost. The Obama folks, if they win, it's going to be because they have a whole different concept of decentralization. I saw well over 100 people of all different ages, but primarily young people, I'd say, with a lot of technology doing all kinds of tasks and a very decentralized management structure. I went to the Clinton headquarters, which is way out of town under an underpass, and it was very much like a time warp, like the 1990s. Same passion, a lot of people from New York, New Jersey, sensing this was a chance to have a role in history, but really like a 1992 campaign.
What kind of decentralized technology tasks?
Well, what they do is they have this system where, I guess, grassroots organizers who aren't paid, volunteers, are entrusted with tasks that generally in campaigns go to paid professionals. The success so far of the Obama campaign is that, you know, one of the dynamics that happens is you have grassroots campaigns that start if you've got some kind of energy going, and then the paid staffers come in. And then the fun goes out of it, and then all of a sudden the volunteers get alienated. The alchemy of the Obama campaign has been to have the paid people come in essence, be in service to the volunteers. That's a very different power dynamic.
Paul Burka from Texas Monthly, you want to comment on that at all?
Well, I'll just give you an anecdotal evidence to support that. A friend of mine who is a lobbyist with Democratic ties told me that his daughter, who goes to Stanford, told him that there were 20 Stanford geeks who took the semester off to come to Texas to work for Obama as volunteers. And they're crunching numbers, and they're arranging phone banks and all of these tasks that that Bob was talking about. And they're given a tremendous amount of freedom in what they do, and they're very good. The Obama people are much, much better than the Clinton people, is my impression. The Clinton people they're you know, kind of what we would call political hacks.
No. I mean, that's kind of dismissed. Bob, that's more dismissive than the way you described the Clinton volunteers.
The passion is there. I'm just saying that they were really caught off guard by how early the Obama effort started. I mean, the word campaign has a military overtone. That's what it's about. While the Senator Obama may have great rhetoric, the practical, tactical reality is he has an incredible space here in Austin that's right next to the Capitol. They can. They have a voice messaging system there. When I try to reach the press secretary here in Austin for the Clinton headquarters, the person says over the phone, "Oh, we have a lousy phone system. I have no way of saving a message, so I'll run it back there." That's just one indicative thing. And the other thing, too, is I think the Clintons left a lot of money on the table because Texas leads the nation number one in the number of people that are without insurance, 5-point-some-odd million people. 24%, and in the ads here, she's emphasizing the whole question of military experience and the rest of it. And what I hear from people is this healthcare is really a big deal here. I mean, according to the National Women's Law Center, out of 27 benchmarks for healthcare for women, Texas either gets an F or an unsatisfactory in 22. That's a huge issue.
Bob, I want to play a couple of clips that you sent us of your conversations with voters. This first one is a guy named Dan Moran in the Houston suburb of Cypress, and it begins with your question.
Now, do people care about immigration down here because it's closer to Mexico? Is that an issue that you care about?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But I think if you look at the population of the greater Houston area, I think we're, you know, Caucasians are now the minority, you know, instead of the majority. So I think we may be losing our voice.
Oh, really? So you like you're a majority of minorities is what's happening now.
Exactly.
So would you tend to be Republican or Democrat at this point? What is your...
Republican. Staunch Republican. Yeah.
So does McCain excite you, or would he be a second choice, or do you think the party could coalesce around him when it comes time to?
Yeah, I think they'll all come together and you know, come around John. You know, right now, there's the reason why I'm not voting in the primary here is I don't think my vote counts.
He doesn't think his vote counts, Bob. But hey, there is a Republican primary there tomorrow, isn't there?
I've never seen a bigger disconnect between the national mainstream media and what's happening on the ground here. This guy Huckabee did not get the memo to stand down. He's all over the place. I listened to a Christian finance program. Actually, it was a Christian mortgage banker, and if you called 1-800, they'd, I don't know, perform a miracle. But and in between these commercial breaks were Huckabee ads wall to wall. He's still trying to give people a last stand here, I think, to try to pop 30%, and he's getting endorsements from newspapers. And I think you shouldn't dismiss the power of the evangelical right here in Texas.
Paul, want to comment on that? There is a Huckabee-McCain election tomorrow, although I'll tell you, out in the rest of the country, the national media isn't talking about it.
No, and McCain is way, way, way ahead in the polls, so it's not going to be a real contest. I mean, clearly what Huckabee is doing is he's staying the course so that he can be the first, like the America's Cup yacht race. He wants to be the first across the line, you know, in 2012. But the main thing about the Republican primary, I mean, like in Harris County, there is a very hot local race for county judge between a moderate Republican and a hard right Republican, and that's going to draw a lot of people, and so you know it will inflate some numbers in the presidential side, but in the early voting in Texas. It's an amazing stat, but in the 15 largest counties, which include all seven of the major Republican metro counties, mm-hmm. The Democrats outvoted the Republicans by 500,000 votes. Unbelievable.
Wow.
Unheard of, unthinkable.
What does that tell you?
The Republican leadership, the Republicans in Texas have alienated a lot of people in the suburbs.
Now,
as Martin Frost said, it's really changing. Texas is changing. You people in the suburbs want good schools. They want good roads. And the things they want are the very things that clean air are the very things that the Republican leadership in the state has attacked with vouchers and toll roads and college tuition deregulation. And it's been and the immigration issue is really political suicide here because the Hispanic vote is so important.
Now, leave it to WNYC's Bob Henley to go to Texas and find a New Yorker. He caught up with this retiree from New York, Herbert Morton, a Democrat who's going to vote tomorrow.
It seems like he's a man of the world. You know, he can fit in with any group.
Do you think that it would be a good signal to send the world to have somebody like that who is so worldly?
I believe so. I think America is ready for a change. Whether it's black, mixed, or woman, you name it, which is good for America.
He's counting on this part of Texas to come through for him because there's been a lot of, this is getting more Democratic than it used to, right? It seems that this is important. What issues are important to you at this point?
Well, I really like something he's done about immigration down here. You know, because it's just not fair. People can come across the border at will, and nothing seems to be done about it. And there's so many in the Houston area. You can have a car accident, and they may not have insurance, and now you're stuck with the bill. So they need to do something about immigration.
So former New Yorker Herbert Morton, he's an Obama supporter. I should have said that up front in case that wasn't clear. But Bob, is that the story of Texas? Take a New Yorker who retires to the Lone Star State and suddenly his top priority is immigration?
Well, yeah, he does love Texas for the conviviality that I've found here, irrespective of party ideology or persuasion. I think that immigration does transcend, you know, any kind of – it's on both sides. Both Democrats and Republicans have concerns about it. But the other thing, too, is the economy here. When you look at – I would suggest anyone really concerned about getting a grasp on what's going on, go to something called Realty Track, TRAC, which has a national map of the hotspots for foreclosure, and it's frightening, truly. Both Texas, Houston, and San Antonio have some of the highest rates of foreclosure, and so you are getting this sense of looming scarcity. Now, true, Texas does have some people benefiting from the energy upsurge, but in general, there is a pretty unprecedented anxiety here. There's issues surrounding transportation. This is a state where you've got to drive. And the state transportation people say they've got no money. The same thing we've heard, it's kind of like, I've said this before, the Katrinification of America in terms of critical infrastructure. Those issues are all starting to resonate, like Paul was mentioning.
We do have one Texas voter calling who happens to be up here in Astoria, Queens today, so let's get him on. Sam in Astoria, you're on WNYC. Hi, Sam.
Hi, how's it going?
All right.
Well, I'm just calling because I'm very interested about this. I mean, I just was in Texas last week, and I'm up here, I'm 24 actually, so I'm a young voter and in the process, but it's funny, like I tried and called in a while ago to get my absentee ballot and I did it online and I haven't received it in the mail up here, and I went down for a little business trip and I ended up actually not being able to vote down there because it was so packed, but it was pretty amazing.
So packed? You mean you went to try to early vote and
yeah.
And there were lines?
Mm-hmm. There were definitely lines mm-hmm. all the way until 7 o'clock and just packed out through the centers.
How long ago was that?
That was 3 days ago.
Wow. So the lines started that far in advance. Paul Burka from Texas Monthly, is that you?
Yes.
No, it's Bob.
Oh, it's Bob. Go ahead, Bob.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying that evidently a million people cast ballots, and more people voted early than voted in total in prior primaries. I mean, the tide is rising here for the Democratic Party, clearly.
So, Sam, if you could have voted, who would you have voted for? At least you'll get to declare publicly, even though your vote won't count.
Thank you. Give me some realm of influence. I would vote for Hillary, personally. I really support her, and I think, truthfully, as far as my view goes, I was a political science major in college and kind of wished I was able to vote, but just given circumstances, wasn't able to. I'm just ready for a Democratic switch. I'm ready for change, and I respect John McCain very much. I mean, the man has done amazing things in his life that not many people really can attest to, and the truth of it is I don't want us to be in war any longer, and as soon as we can manage it, whatever logical path, we should pull out appropriately, but without leaving Iraq and Afghanistan in ruin. And the truth is we need to maximize for ourselves, but also for them. And so I feel as far as the Democratic Party, I think Hillary has the experience. You can't deny her resume. And if I could do either, I would, you know, have both together. Truthfully, it's the most logical way for regime change, which I think is the word that's not used enough.
Sam, thanks a lot for calling. Call us again. And we're going to sneak in one more because we've got Jay calling in from Austin now. Hi, Jay.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
I just wanted to report one man had stated that the Clinton campaign was way out of town, but actually it's just right off a major highway right next to town, and it's at the old Kinky Friedman headquarters.
Right.
Yeah, where they have a cigar, ironically, use the big cigar symbolically at a gentleman's club.
Now, I gather you're a former New Yorker who moved down there just recently?
Yes, I am. And I can say the same thing. The voting lines have been incredibly long in all the grocery stores, and people are 70, 80 people deep waiting to vote.
And what's the biggest cultural adjustment that you've had to make since moving from New York?
Good weather all the time.
That's a tough one. Yeah. Okay, Jay, thanks a lot.
It's raining today, however.
Paul Burka, give me a last word.
Well, I think the biggest thing that you're seeing here is the resurgence of the Democrats, who really haven't had anything good happen since George Bush beat Ann Richards in 1994.
Are you telling me, though, that this state could be in play in November?
Because
that would be a shock.
If you look at the early vote and you see all these suburbs voting Democratic, yes, it would be a long shot. I do think the Democrats have a chance to pick up the Senate seat held by John Cornyn. That's a long shot, too. But you wouldn't have even dreamed of saying anything like that 4 years ago, 8 years ago. This is the first time. I think these Democrats have been here all along. They've never had a chance. They've never had anybody to vote for. And we're suddenly seeing that Texas is a lot closer state than we thought it was.
Paul Burka, executive editor of Texas Monthly, and WNYC's Bob Henley in Austin today. Bob will be on with us for a special edition of the Brian Lehrer Show tomorrow night, Tuesday night, as we do the election returns from Texas, Ohio, Vermont, and Rhode Island beginning at 8 o'clock Tuesday night. Bob, thanks a lot. Paul, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we'll follow the money trail in a minute.